I'm Kevin DeCristofano.
I'm Sean Flanagan.
And we are the Ninja Turtle Nerds, your weekly podcast covering the Ninja Turtle comic book series, one Triceraton issue at a time.
So, how you been? Just so happy the dinosaurs are back.
You been reading any good comics lately?
It's a good question. I've been reading the Grant Morrison Batman run again.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Oh, his kookiness.
Any reason you're rereading it?
Honestly, this is the third or fourth time I've read it, and I think it's the first time I've understood what the hell's going on.
I feel that way every time I play a new Final Fantasy game. Like, you know, I'm playing Final Fantasy 12 right now, and I'm like, I don't understand anything that's going on in the story, but I'm like, okay, but remember, you didn't understand any of the other Final Fantasy games the first time you played either, and now you know those stories by heart. So I like,
yes, Grant
it's just
Morrison.
Something where some stories are confused. Some stories require a reread or a replay or a rewatch to understand them.
Grant Morrison is the Final Fantasy of comic writers.
Yes. Everybody says it. I've been reading the New 52 Aquaman.
Oh, that's good stuff.
And it's really good. I forgot how much of the DC movies are based on the New 52, which is weird because that's not the current like DC continuity anymore.
Yeah.
So it's really weird that their movies are kind of stuck on this thing that the comics are no longer doing. But yeah, if you haven't, read Aquaman and Justice League for New 52. Those more so than Superman or anything else, but like the Justice League run is very much clearly what they did for the Justice League movie. And the first Aquaman arc is very much what they did for the Aquaman movie. I haven't read New 52 Shazam yet, but I guarantee the New 52 Shazam is probably exactly what they did for the Shazam movie. But yeah, that's what I've been into. And of course, reading Ninja Turtle comics. So we can talk about some of them today. What do you think? We did a podcast about it for a couple of years now. We should keep doing that.
I mean, if you insist.
So the title of this issue is untitled, as always. It's issue number 20 in the Image Comics volume. Cover artist Frank Fosco. Story by Gary Carlson. Pencils by Frank Fosco. Inks by Mark Hickey. Lettering, Pat Brusseau. And it came out, it's got a cover date of March of 99. And you know what that means?
We missed a month.
The delays. The delays are starting.
Which means the comic is coming to an end.
The spinning coin is starting to wobble. It's almost at the point where they stopped this run. So let's take a look back at entertainment in March of 99 and see what was going on back then when this comic was for sale. This month in entertainment. I hadn't even discovered comic book stores yet when this was for sale. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. I used to buy comic books. We definitely talked about this because I talked about how you used to be able to get them at Barnes & Noble and at CVS. That's where I bought comic books. And I didn't know comic book stores were... I knew they existed because of The Simpsons, but I thought they were, like, rare and hard to find. And I didn't know where to find one until it was literally, like, the week after high school graduation. I found the one that was in... Our listeners aren't going to know this, but North Kingston. you know, because you and I used to go to the same store over there.
And that guy is the comic book guy from The Simpsons.
Yeah, luckily I've found more welcoming shops since then, and I've moved all
over
the place.
Never have I seen someone who seemed so bothered that you were patronizing their store.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I didn't discover comic book stores until like 2002, and I bought all my comics at the CVS and stuff. I remember trying to collect Shadows of the Dark Knight was a 90s book I was working on. And it's really hard, not knowing comic book stores, to get all the issues. Because the drug stores, they don't get every issue. They skip like three, you know, and then they'll get one in.
Oh, yeah.
I basically thought it was impossible to complete a comic book run. I didn't know how it was done. So the movies that were released in March of 99, that's what we usually talk about here. March of 99, Cruel Intentions, which is a movie that was basically marketed as porn before most people had a lot of internet access.
Pretty much.
And I've seen that movie. It's not what they marketed it as.
No, but
they really did make it seem like it was like a Cinemax movie.
Did you laugh as much as I did at the end when the taxi cab hits him?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course. But I don't know. It was that time where, just like we said with unrated DVDs, when that was like the thing where they're like, oh, we'll get teenagers to buy this because they can't go buy porn yet. Like,
yeah,
that's how they marketed some of these R-rated movies. And also another thing, and I'm going to steal this line from How Did This Get Made podcast, but this was the time back when you could make a movie that was just people talking to each other. Like, there's no explosions or any action sequences in Cruel Intentions. Every scene is just somebody talking to somebody.
Which goes to show the genius of the marketing.
Yeah. And then, like, your action scene in those movies would always be, like, you'd have a scene where somebody flips out and, like, trashes an office or something. And that was the action scene of the movie. Because something crazy has to happen. Otherwise, why are we watching this?
For the taxi cab.
So here's a movie you forgot existed that came out in March of 99. EdTV.
Oh, yeah.
EdTV was, at the time, called a copycat movie for The Truman Show. But the difference being, it kind of was ahead of its time. Because it was ahead of the whole reality TV thing. And basically the plot of EdTV is this guy volunteers to have his life turned into a TV show.
Yep.
And everyone compared it to The Truman Show at the time, but it's not The Truman Show because they're not hiding it. Like, he volunteered for it. And it's basically the first movie about reality TV before reality TV was a big thing. I mean, yeah, I know Survivor, I guess, had dropped at this point, but it hadn't taken over.
It's not like now where it's a genre.
Yeah. Cops was the first one, I think, followed by Real World. And then, of course, the last day of March, I think it was, cinema would never be the same. The Matrix came out.
That was March?
According to this, it was March 31st.
That's just weird. I mean,
let me double check like I do every time you say this.
No, it sounds right. It's just funny to think that it wasn't like a big franchise, you know, thing.
Well, that's summer movie. That's basically April. March 31st, that's basically April.
Oh, okay.
And it went on to put techno in every movie after that. Every single one, still to this day. You know what people forget? You remember the teaser trailer for the first teaser trailer for Spider-Man?
Yes.
Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, yep, in 2002. It used the music from The Matrix because they still didn't know how they were going to market that movie yet. It was the one that said, what was The Ultimate Spin?
Yes.
When they come take the ultimate spin, that Spider-Man marketing campaign. It's the Matrix music behind that techno. All right.
That needs to come back.
Obviously, the number one. Obviously, the number one movie at the box office that month was The Matrix. It made $171 million and would go on to make $466 million total. These numbers might be incorrect because I don't know how it made $171 million releasing the last day of March. Like, did it really make that? That must be at least just from the opening. That can't be the opening weekend either. That's too much. No. I don't know.
It's going to be
But I know it made $466 million total.
Which is funny. Again, that's not a failure, but that's not... Like, now you're like, oh, that's all it made? I thought that made, like, $800 million.
If a movie today was as big as The Matrix was then, it would have made two... It would have been like the Avengers Endgame. That's how big The Matrix was. It would have been $2 billion easy. And then the music of this here month, the Billboard number one songs. We don't do the number twos. March 6th was Angel of Mine by Monica.
Yep.
And then the rest of March, I remember this song dominating the radio that year because of the story behind it. It was Believe by Cher.
Ah, yes. The magic of auto-tune.
And then Kid Rock got a hold of it. Nothing was ever the same. Video games. The Nintendo Power cover says, here's a game I forgot completely. You know me. I'm obsessed with Nintendo 64. And I'm always... like playing old Nintendo 64 games and like reading articles and watching YouTube videos about the top 10 most underrated or the top 10 Nintendo 64 games no one ever talks about, things like that. This game has faded so much that I haven't seen like any talk about it. Maybe it's a terrible game. I don't know. But I remember seeing ads for this game a lot, and now I want to play it because I forgot it existed. But now that I remember it existed, I remember it was everywhere this year. Tonic Trouble.
Tonic Trouble?
I don't know what it's about. But it's very colorful.
Hmm.
Let me see if I can get the cover up for you. Because you'll probably remember when you see it. So it's a very, very colorful cover. You see that?
Oh, that looks... I want to play it. I'm fascinated now.
Yeah, I remember ads for this were all over video game magazines, but it's faded. I haven't seen anyone even talk about the game in forever. And the other games, it says Nintendo 64 lineup, Vigilante 8, California Speed, Rampage 2 Universal Tour, and then it says preview for Command and Conquer, which was not very good on the Nintendo 64. It was not as good as the PC or PlayStation version. And then the Power Awards. Cast your vote. I guarantee Ocarina of Time won like every single award. Because these were probably for the previous year. Ocarina of Time came out in December of 98.
Oh, yeah.
So I guarantee... they cleaned up this award show. If we do a comic that came out the month that they did the awards, I'll read them.
Oh, here. I guess some people knew about Tonic Trouble. It sold 1.1 million copies.
Yeah, like I said, it was a very popular game that I haven't heard anyone talk about since. And that's weird because I'm obsessed with the Nintendo 64 and I'm always watching videos about it. And I'm trying to get a complete collection, as you know. Like, I've got, like, I'd say, like, 33% of the Nintendo 64 games right now, and I forgot that one existed. I'll have to check that book you gave me where it has all the games, see what they wrote about it. TV events. March 7th, Beast Wars ends after 3 seasons and 50 episodes. Womp, and then on March 11th, the Jumanji cartoon ended. Which I didn't think it lasted this long.
I didn't 1999. I couldn't get into the cartoon.
It's a perfect premise for a cartoon. All kinds of wacky stuff. Like, that says animated series all day. But you're right. I never got into it either. I don't think they executed it very well. It only had 40 episodes. Here's a show you'll remember. March 24th, The Norm Show premieres on ABC.
Oh, yeah, with Norm Macdonald, that guy.
Yeah, where he played a retired NHL player who had a gambling addiction.
So, himself.
I remember two things about that show. Three, because one is I remember I loved it. Nick and I used to watch it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It was on right before the Drew Carey show. I guess I remember a lot of things about it. It was on right, no, after the Drew Carey show. And I remember, the reason I remember it's linked to Drew Carey show is Drew Carey show used to do this contest where they would have an episode where tons of, they would have a bunch of mistakes in the episode intentionally.
You had to find them.
And you would write in and whoever could spot the most mistakes and wrote in won the contest. So they try in the, I think it was only on for one season, maybe two, but in the brief time the Norm show was around, they paired it with that. And his contest was what they did for the Norm show was they put a bunch of famous movie props in the episode and whoever could spot the most movie props won. So like on his desk would be like a lightsaber and like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think Indiana Jones's hat was in the episode, stuff like that.
I find it interesting that Norm MacDonald on a sitcom actually worked.
I loved it. I remember there was a hilarious gag once where he found this like underground gambling ring and the game they were doing was like he didn't speak whatever language they were speaking, but they were like holding two eggs and then they would smash the eggs into each other and whoever's egg didn't break won. It was like this really random game. I loved awesome. That show. I really wish that show lasted. But I guess, you know, it's Norm. It's he's not for everyone. And then speaking of stuff that isn't for everyone that didn't last, but this one actually comes back a million times. March 28th, Futurama premieres on Fox.
Yeah, I'm going to say there. Just let it die, but... Yeah, Futurama.
It's coming back. And I'm not going to lie. I'm going to watch it when it comes back, and you and I will talk about whether or not we liked it. But
sure, I'll watch it too.
Why?
But, yeah.
It doesn't age well, though. I've been doing a rewatch.
Really? And
the thing is, for a show that takes place 1,000 years in the future, and I love Futurama. Don't think this is me dumping on it for people who don't know that I love it. But... For a show that takes place 1,000 years in the future, it was way more topical with its references than The Simpsons ever were, at least during The Simpsons' golden age. Hmm. So there's so many jokes in there that are super dated or just nonsense now. Like I watched an episode the other day where at the end of the episode, Farnsworth's kid gets money and he says he's going to invest it in the stock market. Or no, it was Hermes' kid. Gets money. And he says he's going to invest it in the stock market. And he says he's going to buy 100 shares of Amazon.com. And Hermes says, oh, a risk taker. I like it. Because at the time, Amazon was a risk. I had to Google this. I was like, why did they say that? Because obviously now that stock would be worth enough for that kid to buy a car. But, or a nice car. But, yeah, so or 100 shares, you could probably buy more than that. But anyway, so I looked it up. I was like, why did they make this Amazon joke? I guess the year that episode came out, Amazon stock was really volatile. It kept going up and then falling down and then going up and falling down. It was like all over the place.
See, I didn't realize Futurama was like had that dated material. I'm going to have to go back and watch it.
No, there's a lot of, especially when they do all the celebrity cameos. It's kind of sad now that like some of the heads in the jar celebrities are like dead in real life. So it's like, oh, he didn't get to come back as a head in a jar. That's sad. But yeah, there's a lot of topical. There's stuff. There's a few references that I'd be like, why would people 1,000 years from now even be talking about that? Like there's some stuff that's that specific, but. I don't know. Join our Futurama podcast that we're starting soon. The last thing I'll say about Futurama, Luck of the Fryrish, better than Jurassic Park. Just tossing that out there. Gets me every time. Cry like a baby, Luck of the Fryrish. Perfect script. Perfect.
All right.
Saturday Night Live, March 13th, was hosted by Ray Romano with musical guest The Coors? Don't know. C-O-R-R-S. Don't know who that is.
Nope.
March 20th was hosted by Drew Barrymore with musical guest Garbage.
Yeah.
They had that one song. I don't even know it. It's something about when it rains.
Close enough.
All right, where's this thing available?
So you can read this on Comixology or in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Urban Legends Volume 2.
I just realized all next season you're going to have to be like, this comic's not available anywhere unless you find it in a back issue bin. And towards the end of the season, we're going to be like, this comic is available for $3,000 on eBay. And that's it. Because Volume 4 had a very limited run. And it hasn't been reprinted.
It'll keep it interesting.
I won't say how we're going to read it, because I will not incriminate us. So, getting into this... the cover for this issue. Sorry. Thoughts, opinions, questions.
So the original cover reminds me of the Batcave.
The Triceraton's got a real derpy look on his face on the original cover.
Yeah. And then...
But it's Leonardo jumping down on two Triceratons from the top of a T-Rex skeleton. What more could you want?
And then the reprint cover... I don't know. Donnie just looks weird.
Yeah, he looks like a linebacker. Like, he looks like they're... It's the same room... The T-Rex skeleton's in the back, so they know that's the selling point for the issue, I guess. And it's the common denominator between the two covers. And it's him coming straight at the reader like a linebacker, complete with his football shoulder pads because of his armor. So we open up the issue, and we are in the Fantasticar from last time. Picks up right where it left off with the Triceraton that was transported back to the distress signal that the car apparently is still emitting.
Yeah.
I guess Donatello, even though they mentioned Donatello's basically replaced every piece of this thing at
except
this point.
That.
I guess it's still putting out the distress call from Volume 1. Because that's how they explain this Triceraton was able to teleport there. So he teleports in and... has a fight with Donatello. Michelangelo's girlfriend is still there, whose name I can't... Sarah, that's her name. She's still in the car with him. And as Donatello falls, he tries to... He tries to use his Transformer armor to make, like, angel wings and a jetpack. But it doesn't work because he doesn't have jet fuel. I think.
Yes. So he does the helicopter because it's mechanical. I kind of liked that.
And it's a very... He makes the joke where he says, go, go, Gadget Copter. And that is exactly what it looks like. It looks like when Inspector Gadget has the helicopter above his head.
All I could think in that moment was Donnie does machines and plummets to the earth. Because this is like the third or fourth time he's fallen in IDW or in Image.
So he catches up to the flying car, and in the car, Sarah's punching the Triceraton in the face. And as soon as he's like grabbing her arm here, it's kind of, I think they're trying to confuse you on purpose, where the car like flips over and the Triceraton falls out and you don't know why. And then it's got Donatello landing in the car. The next thing you know. And I guess it's implied that he flipped the car, even though I can't see in any of these panels. How did he do it with the remote?
So they don't... I know they've used the remote before.
Yes, that's what it is. I just figured it out. He's got the remote control. I just remembered, because you remember a few issues ago? I'm figuring
it,
this
right?
out live as we record. There was a few issues ago where the thing took off in the cemetery, and I think it was Raphael flipped it upside
Raph
down with
it.
The remote.
Yep.
Okay, so that's what he did. And then he lands back in, and the Triceraton fell like almost cartoonishly through the roof of a museum.
Yep.
It's great. I love it. And Donatello gets on his cellular telephone, which he only has because of his cyborg armor, I'm assuming.
Well, yeah.
Because it's not the size of an actual phone booth. And he calls up his daddy. He calls Splinter, who's still got the cat on his lap. All these issues later.
I kind of wish there was like a side story going on with Clunk and Splinter, like watching TV or I don't know, whatever they're up to.
Not just TV, but I'm pretty South sure Park. Splinter is supposed to be watching South Park.
Yep.
Because it's drawn, you remember in one issue I said that the Mickey Mouse was drawn lawsuit perfect? This is drawn whatever the opposite of that is, like as close as you can get without giving a lawsuit, but it's definitely supposed to be South Park that he's watching, which interesting show for Splinter. Usually he's seen watching like soap operas or kung fu movies or not really sure why. That seems like more of what the writers were interested in than what the character is interested
in. It was the 90s, so Splinter wanted to see what all this South Park, you know, hubbubaloo was.
That show is filthy. It belongs in the sewer, which is right where he's watching it.
Oh.
So, yeah, he gets the phone call, and he's basically like a Triceraton. Well, that's trouble. That's basically what he says. He's like, yeah, this is very bad news. All right, goodbye.
I concur.
Now, he says he'll warn his brothers, but that's basically what the phone call is. Triceraton, that is terrible news. All right, talk to you later. And then this is basically set up for, we see a shadowy figure sneaking up on Splinter as he hangs up the phone. And we're going to cut to something else on the page turn for drama.
Dun dun.
So on the next page, it's back to Donatello walking over to the mangled body of the Triceraton that fell through the roof.
I think he landed on his head. Arms...
Yeah, he landed like his arms look like they're going in the wrong directions. It's not looking good for him. And this is a really cool art style here where out of the shadows, like you start to see like the flashlight turn on.
Yep.
But it's not a flashlight. It's two Triceratons like teleporting in. But it's just cool how like they made the light like grow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you don't know what it is at first. And I thought it was, when I saw that first panel, I thought it was going to be a security guard. And then I read the next, like with a flashlight. And then in the next panel you see, oh, it's a portal opening up. And is this where I think... No, that's later in the issue where they mention that the pink-skinned mammals like were able to wipe out the dinosaurs or something like that. The Triceratons do not like the dinosaur bones in this museum because they are very dinosaur-like.
I think you need more Triceratons in museums critiquing things.
But anyway, so the two Triceratons teleport in. And say, you know, kill them both because it's Donatello and Sarah there. Donatello says, move it, Sarah. They're not friendly at all. She still thinks they're friendly.
I like that they do that with her, though, because she's like, but they're lizards. I'm a lizard.
She's basically like a puppy, her character.
It's yes.
Very trusting, very innocent, very puppy-like. On the next page... Casey Jones, with his golf bag full of hockey sticks and baseball bats, complete cosplay Casey Jones here, and his t-shirt that only goes, that lets his abs show.
I mean,
you know, he's always got a t-shirt that's cut off in the middle.
The guy just lost his job. What else was he going to do?
He doesn't know that yet.
He doesn't say he doesn't know that.
And he's got so many veins shaking this cab driver's hand. Oh, my God, the veins. So he took a cab home, and he's shaking this cab driver's hand, and the cab driver is like, oh, you're that guy who killed the lizards. I ain't charging you for the cab. Don't worry about it.
You know, he goes the cabbie from every mid-90s action movie.
Yeah. Oh, you're the hero. Don't worry about it. So he goes inside, and I love how they did this, where inside is Splinter holding. So we see who the shadowy figure was. It was Pimlico. And she's tied up with the phone cord, and Splinter is holding her sword. So I love how they didn't show you the battle, but like the last two scenes ago, you see the shadowy figure sneaking up on him. And then you just see the aftermath of, like, Splinter cannot be snuck up on.
it's just a cool panel, and it's an awkward panel at the same time.
Well, you have to, with Image Comics, you kind of have to tune that out. Yes, there is some male gaze going on here with the way she is drawn. But I love the story. I love the story they're telling here of you can't sneak up on Splinter. The art is another story. The art would not fly today in today's society. It's not good. And it doesn't match the how she looks on the next page, I might add. But we'll stop the description there. Anyway. Next page, Splinter, Casey, and Pimlico are sitting down for tea. She is still... Oh, no, she's not still tied.
No, that's such a great moment, though. The next thing is Splinter made everyone tea.
Yep. And I don't know how he didn't see this coming, but she throws her hot tea in Casey's face and makes her escape. So you should have left her tied up, Splinter. I don't know how you didn't see that coming.
He just figured tea was very civilized and that everyone knows the etiquette.
And it's worth pointing out in this part of the issue that Splinter calls her Lady Pimlico. Did you notice that?
I did notice that.
Because in her first appearance, she flipped out when somebody called her Lady Pimlico. She was like, I am not a lady. I'm a ninja. And we were like, those things aren't opposites. You could be both. and here she has no reaction to it. So I don't know if they've decided now she's Lady Pimlico, or if she just doesn't want to waste the time correcting Splinter.
I think if you're defeated by a phone cord, you pretty much go with whatever that person calls you.
I still don't understand why she was so offended. Like, there's Lady Deathstrike. There's lots of lady characters in comics. It doesn't...
Because she's...
It's not used in a derogatory way. It's used as a respect thing, I thought. I thought it was like royalty almost. It's like this... Introducing lady and sir, you know, like, I don't know.
This is Image Comics, man. There's no lady.
Well, apparently when Splinter says it, it's okay. So just as she leaves, Leonardo gets home, and we kind of have an update for new readers here on everything that's been going on. Talk about the lizards in the sewer. We talk about how Leonardo's missing his hand because one of the lizards bit it off.
I like Splinter's reaction to that.
Yeah. What does he say?
It's just the fact no one brought it up to him. Like, he's the last one to know. So it's just like, oh my god, your hand's gone.
And then we get a couple of panels of Pimlico escaping down the sewer before it says elsewhere, and we go back to the museum.
I like that panel of her escaping. I don't know why. It's just cool looking.
It is. Yeah, she's like hanging from a pipe, making her way out of the sewer.
It's one of those things that I guess it didn't have to look as good as it does.
Yeah. So one thing I noted here, we're back at the museum where Donatello and Sarah are hunkered down, hiding from the Triceratons who teleported in earlier and are searching for them. And at one point, Donatello says, it's no good, Sarah. He's not answering, talking about calling Splinter. Do you remember the SOS phone number yet? Which was, as we talked about last issue, the Special Operations Strike Force, who in Image Comics, they're in charge of like policing superheroes and hiding them from the public. I thought it was interesting that here is where they gave the asterisk and filled the reader in that SOS is Special Operations Strike Force. That should have been last issue.
Yeah, that is weird. That's where they came up
first. Just saying. And basically, Sarah thinks that the Triceratons are going to be friendly and walks over to them and gets shotted at. She gets kind of blown away.
That's kind of
Donatello is
first reaction of most characters in this run is just getting shot.
And then as Donatello stands up from where he was hiding and prepares to charge at the Triceratons like a linebacker, this is where the cover comes from.
Yeah.
Because as we said, the reprint covers are always something directly from the comic, and the original covers are a little more artistic. As he's getting ready to charge at the Triceratons, we move over to our fifth story. There's a lot going on here. And
there is.
I'm not saying that as like an insult. Normally it'd be like, oh, here on storyline F. But we've got Leonardo came home. We've got the Pimco Splinter thing. We've got Donatello in the museum. We've got this story. And I feel like I'm forgetting one. Michelangelo is still somewhere. Everybody's all over the place. But in my notes, I wrote that if this was an episode of the 2003 cartoon show, this is where it would have started.
Oh, okay.
Because you know how all of those episodes start with one of the turtles narrating something, and that's what this is. It's Raphael going like, my name is Raphael. I'm a ninja. I'm also known as the Shredder, leader of the Foot Clan. They too are ninja. Like, this is where the 03 cartoon would have started. It would have ended right here with this line where he's talking about how since he took over the Foot Clan, and I really like that they did this. Side note here, I feel like they got into this more than the IDW run ever did in this one page.
Really?
Because the IDW run is kind of just Splinter takes over the Foot Clan, and the Turtles are like, Splinter, why are you leading the Foot Clan? They're bad guys. And like, I guess like once or twice they'd be like, you know, they like rob people and kill people, right? It's bad. Here, I feel like they just kind of shine a spotlight on it in a better way, where Raphael is doing the internal narration saying like, I didn't really think this through, because you can't run an empire like this with no money. So I've been using the Foot Clan to get money, but to get money with the Foot Clan, you got to do robberies and murders and spy on people. And I'm not feeling good about that. And this is where the 2003 cartoon narration would have ended. He would have been like, my name's Raphael. I'm a ninja. I lead the Foot Clan. Dear God, what have I done? And then it would have been into the theme song.
It's a great moment, too, because of the fact it's Raphael wondering about this.
Mm-hmm.
And normally you feel like he'd just kind of be like, yeah, whatever, hey, we go with it. You get to kill a few people, you get to kill a few people. So it brings a maturity, I guess, to his character that you don't see, at least in what we've read, too often.
Yeah, you get more inside. I feel like a lot of Turtles books don't really go inside his head as much.
Yeah.
And this internal narration really lays it all out for you to see where he's coming from and what he regrets doing and what he's trying to do.
It's a great counterpart to the last issue where him and Splinter kind of talk about, you know, why Raph doesn't think it's wrong he's going to lead the Foot Clan, why Splinter thinks it is. So the fact he's still thinking about it later on means that it stuck with him. And it's character growth, yeah. So I enjoy it.
Wait, you mean that one conversation didn't just fade away and not ever mean anything later on? It actually had carried over into had lasting effects?
It's yeah.
Crazy. Every conversation should be like that.
It defied comic logic.
So as Raphael's thinking about all this, Leonardo pops in out of the blue. He's just smashing foot skulls all over the place. He's causing a ruckus. As the Wu-Tang Clan would say, he is bringing the ruckus. And he gets up to Raphael, who the Foot Clan are basically like, I thought you said he wasn't allowed in here. And that kind of stood out to me because I didn't think that was the case.
No.
Like, I remembered they had the argument a few issues ago where the conversation was basically like, all right, I'm not going to try to help you lead the Foot Clan. But I never got the impression that he couldn't stop by and visit and like talk to Raphael. Like, I never got the impression until here. It seems like what they're trying to say is now Raphael is disconnected from his family. Like, no, I'm off limits. I'm off doing the Foot Clan thing. And that's not the impression I got before. I thought he was just saying, like, you can't help me lead because if they see that I need help, I'll look weak and it'll all fall apart. But I didn't think it was like, you can't ever come here.
Yeah, I agree. I don't feel like there was a moment that kind of makes this part be sensible. And the Foot Clan guy just makes it seem like he doesn't have a bracelet. He can't get in here.
His bracelet is orange and we switched to blue 2 weeks ago.
Doesn't he know that? He's the blue one.
So I like how Leonardo is poking the bear here.
Mm-hmm.
how he's talking to Raphael. He calls him Shredder. That part was so good to me when he's like, he's telling Raphael basically that the Triceratons are here, which was the conversation he was having with Splinter, we should say. We forgot to say that. And he says, judging from what I see here, I'm happy not to be a part of this. The Earth's being invaded by Triceratons, Shredder. I came here to ask for your help. Like, he's so, you could see like how a brother would say that to another brother, like, oh, you're Shredder now? Like,
it works really well because it's something Raph would do to Leo.
Yes, that too. And then we finally see that the Michelangelo story is still right where we left them off. They're kind of like in a broom closet here. Because they were, you remember where the teleporter machine was, and it's Michelangelo, Casey, Leatherhead, and Dr. X, the Outram. And they're off to the side because the Triceratons have taken over the room with the teleporter machine, and they're slowly teleporting their Triceraton army over.
To basically everywhere.
Yeah.
They get pretty good range.
Obviously, they can't. Michelangelo makes a good point. He's like, look, we can't wait for the others to come find us. They're going to keep, the longer we wait, the more Triceratons show up. Like, the more they teleport in. So he's like, all right, let's Gungala Gungala this thing. And remember Casey's old saying?
Yeah, I don't think he says it in Volume 3.
He doesn't say it often. He says it,
I feel like
twice in the Mirage volume.
2012, he says, I feel like he says it a lot.
It's just like, at this point, it's just like a reference to that time he said it once. Anytime it comes up very rarely. But I wish it would come up more. But instead, they say, Michelangelo says, it's showtime. They put the Outram down on in the corner because obviously he can't fight. He's just a little brain. They say it's showtime, and Casey says, yeah, let's kick some Jurassic butt. And Leatherhead's not saying anything. He's just looking scary. And they're all lunging towards the enemy to be continued. You know what show had a funny to be continued? I remember Gargoyles. Said it kind of funny at the end of the episodes. It was like, to be continued. It had like an accent to it.
Unless you stop watching.
To be continued. It's sounding more and more now like the girl from Brave. To be continued. If you had a chance to change your fate, would you? So I'm at this issue where you were last issue. I loved it. There's a lot of great action. Triceraton War is getting kicked off here. There's teleporting. You get to see Raphael in the Shredder armor. Like, everything that's good about Image is in this issue. I gave this one a 4.5.
All right, I went with a 4.3. I liked it a little less than last issue, but it was still really good stuff.
Okie doke. My title, I didn't really have much this week, but since Leonardo went and recruited, so the Triceratons are clearly setting up for this giant Triceraton war they're about to have, and Leonardo goes and he's basically recruiting the Foot Clan now to fight for them in this war, so I just called it Enter the Foot.
That's good.
They're entering this war.
I just went with Casey Jones Returns because he finally feels like the character to me now.
Which part? The part where he was on TV acting like... Oh, no, that was the last issue. This issue, well, he's in the closet. Yeah.
Yeah. Between the getting the tea thrown in his face and then just suiting up and getting that stupid shirt out again. And it feels like, other than the mask, you've got Casey Jones back again. So like I said, it feels like Turtles.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's got that... Always got that cut-off t-shirt. I don't know why. But he's going to fight dinosaurs with a hockey stick. And any comic book character that'll fight dinosaurs with a hockey stick is okay in my book.
I mean, even that in live action would be amazing. Casey Jones fighting a Triceraton? Oh.
So that sounds like everything we have to say about this issue. We are, what, like six issues away
say,
now?
It's almost
from the end of Image.
The end of season three already. The end of season three already, almost.
Well, six more issues. I mean, and who knows how many bonuses we'll have in between seasons here. We got a lot of Turtle stuff we haven't covered. That's the best thing about Turtles, is we will never be able to cover it all. They've constantly got stuff coming out. So yeah, speaking of stuff we have to cover, let's toss it over to Future Kevin and see what's going on that week. Maybe we get a bonus episode or something coming out. I don't know. Tell us what's going on, Future Kevin.
Maybe we have one.
Oh, past Kevin, if only you knew how much was going on in the world of Ninja Turtles this week. Still excited about that trailer that dropped. I can't watch it enough. And on top of that, we're learning that we're going to get a TV show off of this trailer, and we're going to get multiple spin-off movies about the villains. I mean, this stuff was already rumored, but it's kind of all coming together now that we have a visual style to associate with it, so that's pretty cool. Other than that, nothing to report. Listen to our other podcast, Nintendo Therapy. Find us on socials at TMNT Nerds, and that's about it. We'll see you next week for more Image Comics Turtles.